What is up, freaks? It's your boy Marty Bent here on a beautiful Thursday afternoon in Brooklyn, New York, for this week's edition of Rabbit Hole Recap. Right now, the Bitcoin XBX index, according to TradeBlock, is sitting at $5,399.66. Matt, do you have the block at hand?
No, I do not, but I am ridiculously bullish.
I am as
well.
Super
excited this week.
We've got a lot of topics. Before we dump into them, let's give a shout out to our sponsors. This week's edition Rabbit Hole Recap is brought to you by Unchained Capital. You freaks know all about them already, and they're two of three multi-sig vault service that they just launched. Go to www.unchained-capital.com/vaults to check these out. It's compatible with your Trezor and Ledger. When you guys are not connected to your computers, it's 100% cold storage. And these vault solutions will also give you access to credit down the line with Unchained's loan services. On top of this, if you sign up now using our ref link, which will be provided in the links, you freaks get 3 months free of Seyfedina Moose's The Bitcoin Standard research bulletin, some very good economic information about Bitcoin that you're getting with your vault services. So again, go check out www.unchained-capital/vaults or use the link that we provide in the show notes. Got an old sponsor coming back, Matt. This show is also sponsored by the Cash App. You freaks know about them, our favorite app to stack sats here in the U.S. Cash App has been the number one finance app in the App Store for almost 2 years. It was the first major peer-to-peer payments app to support Bitcoin. You freaks know all about it. It's still the fastest and easiest way to on-ramp Bitcoin users from the fiat world. No more waiting for 5 days for your ACH transfer to come through. With Cash App, you can buy Bitcoin instantly and send it to a wallet of your choice. Cash App also comes with standard banking features and direct deposits and others your bank would never even consider, like the Cash Card. We've talked about this before. It's a debit card you get. It comes with their Boost program and lets you save money every time you use Lyft, Whole Foods, Chipotle, Chick-fil-A, Starbucks, Dunkin', local coffee shops, and a bunch of other stuff. You save money at these merchants. You use that to stack sats. Download Cash App today from the App Store or Google Play. Matt, it's only been 6 days since we last met. A lot's going on. Bitfinex Tether is still big in the news.
Well, let's not even... Well, let's just hold off for a sec. I mean, well, first of all, the block height is 574,311. It's a lot of blocks.
Getting closer to block 630,000 by the day.
Let's just... You know, it just feels good this week. You know, I just, everything just felt really, I don't know. Am I being too enthusiastic? It felt really, like, bullish this week.
Is this the calm before the storm? Before the Bitfinex shitstorm?
Yeah, it could quite possibly be.
We wanted to start with something else, but let's just jump into this. We're already talking about this topic. So, Bitfinex Tether has been in the news all week. It seems as though Bitfinex, to get around their liquidity woes with that $851 million, is going to launch an IEO, initial exchange offering, I believe, for $1 billion. Is that correct?
Yeah. $1 billion IEO.
Yeah, there's rumors swirling that it's already half the raise has been committed. These are Twitter trader rumors. We cannot confirm them. But it seems as though... since the last time we met, that Bitfinex as a company and Tether as a stablecoin has held up pretty well, despite
premium,
all the news.
The premium on Bitfinex is what, like 6.5% right now?
Yeah, I checked. Like, I've been tracking the premium for the last few days. It was at 6.25%, 6.25%. 3 days ago, trickled down. It's about like 5.25%. 2 days ago, yesterday, started creeping back up, and now, yeah, it's about like 6.5%.
It's the second highest it's been since 2 years ago.
Yes, correct. So that's something you look at. The premiums basically created, if people are looking to get out of the Tether, or on Bitfinex in particular, probably buying Bitcoin on that platform, which is driving the price up.
Well, you can't. It's like, I don't know if it's possible to withdraw. Well, it appears that it's very difficult to withdraw U.S. dollars from Bitfinex, which makes sense because that's where their money woes supposedly came from, the $850 million that was seized through the withdrawal process. So the proof that U.S. dollar withdrawals aren't working well is this premium, right? Because if you can't get dollars out, you can't arbitrage it away. The only way to get money off of Finex right now, which is similar to other exchanges that have been when they were failing, is you convert to Bitcoin or a different cryptocurrency, and then you withdraw that way. So all of their pairs have premiums on them.
Yeah, and this is so that premiums has materialized on Bitfinex over the last week, and then this has obviously drawn a lot of attention to Tether, which has held its peg pretty well throughout all this chaos. And there's a bunch of chatter today in particular.
What is Tether trading at? Like 98 cents or something like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, I think it's back above 97, pulling back towards the dollar. But there's a lot of speculation, not even speculation, just a lot of questions out there about why some people aren't. I believe there's a premium to lend out Tether right now, if you're willing to lend out to shorts.
It's really hard to short Tether.
Okay.
You either have to do it through Finex itself.
Yeah.
Or through, like, an OTC desk.
Yeah.
And the rates are, like, ridiculously high.
Up to 20%, I've heard.
Yeah. I think they're higher on Bitfinex.
I would imagine.
Because that's, like, P2P, like, retail-ish.
Yeah.
And especially on Bitfinex, you're really vulnerable there because if Bitfinex is, you know, they're all, Bitfinex runs Tether, they could totally, like, screw with the price and shit to, they can manipulate it to take money there.
Yeah. Well, we also touched on this last week, too. A lot of other bigger exchanges are sort of entangled in Tether, too. So maybe there's some game theory at play where to keep the stability of their exchanges, they're forced to sort of hold Tether and not put it out there on the market.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. When you have, like, something centralized like this, do you ever really get, like, true... Like, I feel like you can never really get, like, that proper downward exposure because you never know what could happen.
Yeah.
It's too tightly controlled.
Yeah.
So the market doesn't really find itself. But obviously, you know, we haven't heard any issue. Surprise. I'm really surprised that we haven't heard any issues with Bitfinex withdrawals. Like you said, the peg is staying, like, decent amount. And, like, my question is, like, who the fuck would be holding money on Bitfinex or in Tether right now? Like, who are the people that left holding it, right? They must either be, like, insiders or, like, close to the inside that have a lot of faith in the project, because I'm just, it amazes, I feel like they should have run out of money by now if that was the issue. If the issue was, like, exit scam, fraud type issue, not government closure. Because that could just still happen at any time.
Yeah. That's interesting. The saga of Bitfinex and Tether continues on. It's one that we don't necessarily love here on Tales from the Crypt, but it seems that the issue has been forced upon us in the last couple of weeks.
I have a fun little thought experiment. Okay, so, you know, we're just like minding your own business and, like, in a week or 2 weeks, like, Bitfinex stops processing withdrawals. They stop processing withdrawals, and then they, like, basically go, like, completely belly up within the next month. Let's just say this happens. Like, how does that affect Bitcoin? How does that affect the rest of the ecosystem?
It definitely affects the perception, but it does not affect Bitcoin at all. I'm sure there would be...
Do you think we would dump hard on the price? Like, dump hard on the news?
That's a good question. I mean, Quadriga was what, 190 million?
Quadriga was like a nothing exchange,
yeah,
in my opinion.
But there was a bit of hoopla after that. Like, a lot of Canadians who are on Quadriga definitely think of Bitcoin in a worse light than they did before they got exit scammed.
Oh, absolutely. And definitely, like, Canadians in general probably have more exposure to that.
Yes. So Bitfinex failed, yes. I think it would be bad for the market temporarily, short term, medium term, but long term, no. Bitcoin itself could be long term healthy for the ecosystem, just to get this wart on the industry's ass. Not from a PR perspective, like, it's just like there always seems to be problems throughout the years with Bitfinex and Tether, and it just seems like an avenue through which no coiners and shit coiners like to attack Bitcoin, but it really does not affect Bitcoin at the end of the day.
Yeah, but if it's, I agree. I mean, I think, like, obviously medium to long term would be no effect. Definitely no negative effect. I think if it's not Tether, they'll just pick a different reason. You know, like, I could see, like, BitMEX being an easy target as well. And I personally hope that we will always have, you know, like, the more cowboy-esque elements in the Bitcoin space. Yeah, like, U.S. regulations have a huge overreach. So whether or not, you know, the specific situation of Bitfinex and Tether, like, I hope we see a lot of these companies like BitMEX that, you know, don't do KYC, don't, you know, do things the Bitcoin way.
Yeah, and this actually brings up, wasn't on our list. Maybe it was on our list. I haven't seen it yet, but no, I don't think it was. I saw you in responding to CZ today and his explanation for why they need to implement KYC AML. He's saying it's to stop hackers and fraudsters and to help users, but you made a very...
It's the third company they've hired in like a month. And they're not firing the other companies. They're just adding on top of it.
It's a chain analysis company.
Yeah, right? It's a chain analysis company. And they're doing what we talked about, those shotgun KYC requests where they lock your account and won't let you withdraw. And he's selling it as security bonus, but I guess it's like kind of security for him, but it's not security for his users. It just puts them at more risk. And he didn't respond.
He didn't respond. Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's put it in layman's terms. It puts users at more risk because you just have your information out there in some data repository held by somebody that could be Bitfinexed in the future.
Yeah, and I was talking to some of these people, like, they were anonymous already, and then they have to do KYC and, like CZ saying it's, like, for, like, account verification. Like, CZ has nothing to verify it against. There's no person on file to begin with, you know, and that's the first. So, like, it doesn't even, if you get your account hacked, it doesn't help you in that situation because the hacker will just do the KYC or just get a straw KYC person to do it. Yes. Like, have someone else do the KYC.
So part. There's some Orwellian wordplay at play here with Binance's implementation of KYC.
It just comes down to that regulators are compelling this stuff, and Binance has become that big of a target. You know, we saw it happen with Bittrex, we saw it happen with Polo, and now Binance has become this big of a target that they have to, if they interact with the, you know, the traditional banking system.
Yes.
Which is also, you know, Bitfinex for the longest time. Like, how do you imagine moving billions of dollars without permission, without Bitcoin, like with actual U.S. dollars? Like, that's insane.
Yeah, I think Safe just tweeted out there was like a $220 million Bitcoin transaction that happened yesterday. I think the fee was like $3 or something like that. Just crazy thing. Some people are speculating that's a whale moving to dump, but who knows?
That's what's the funniest about all this shit is every time, like, a lot of people don't know, like, Gox, like, was also just a fraudulent business. But they, what really tipped it over the iceberg was they had money seized too in a U.S. bank account. And I feel like every time this type of thing happens, it just, people always blame Bitcoin for it, but it actually proves the value prop of Bitcoin that, you know, that we do need a value transfer protocol that we can just easily transfer value around the world.
That's why we have Bitcoin. And good segue here because the latest release of Bitcoin was released last night, version 0.18.0. Is it considered a major release?
I guess so.
Yeah. We're on from 17 to 18 now.
Yeah.
Yeah, so with this comes a couple of upgrades. So if you're running a node, could be opportune time to upgrade and start testing this out. One known issue, this is for advanced users, who've enabled coin control and are using multiple wallets with the HD feature. The core developers are recommending that you do not use coin control features if you have multiple wallets loaded up. And then speaking with the wallet, a sub-project of Bitcoin Core now provides hardware wallet interaction scripts, which allow you to interact with your hardware wallets and the Bitcoin Core wallet via the command line. So bunch of cool upgrades. Haven't gone through all of them yet. Still have to. But yeah, that dropped last night. We'll put a link. If you're running a full node, you can update that now.
The hardware wallet support is really, it's a big deal. It's a huge step in that direction. And that's, I think that's the same. That's what Wasabi used to integrate hardware wallet support in their wallet. And I think that'll be like a huge advantage for people to run their full nodes, is that they can actually use their hardware wallet with them.
Yes. I think in this upgrade also, it's forcing miners to recognize SegWit transactions as well.
Yeah, and the get block template.
Yeah, and the get block template to help them get as much fees as possible.
But I think, and like pretty much every miner already is, unless they fuck something up, because otherwise you just wouldn't make as much money.
Yeah, they've included like an error message that lets you know that you're not making as much money as you could. Yeah, so it's Bitcoin version 0.18.0. It's out there. Another big thing that was in the news yesterday, Square announced their quarterly earnings from the first quarter, and their Cash App team on their platform sold $65.5 million worth of Bitcoin.
Stacking sats.
Stacking sats, freaks. Disclaimer, obviously, Cash App sponsored the pod. But, hey, do you think hashtag stacking sats had any influence on this?
You know, I like to think so. But, you know, I think definitely, didn't they report that most purchases, like it was very distributed, very small amounts of purchases?
Yes. Another interesting thing is like this didn't catch the run up in early April, which is the second quarter. So.
Right. Exactly. So I think it really shows the power of just the masses, like large amounts of people just buying small amounts on just weekly basis, just stacking sats.
Yeah. And that sort of lays into what I touched on in the bend today is, again, maybe these incumbent companies like a Square, which has an established revenue stream via its point of sale services and its merchant services and everything it's built up to this point, maybe it's easier for them to implement and spread Bitcoin because they are, one, already have a bootstrapped user base with all their clients and app users, and then two, they're able to sort of laser focus on Bitcoin in particular, not have to worry about other revenue streams provided by the risk of getting into altcoin trading and stuff like that, and offering tokens at a token casino, if you will. So I touched on this in the bend today. I think maybe Square is the first, not the first, but one of the biggest, probably Overstock, you could argue, has been in it for a while, but they're not on level with Square, I would argue. But like an incumbent institution stepping in, being able to provide Bitcoin with like an on-ramp that doesn't need to sort of bootstrap a whole user base, right? Like an app.
Yeah, they already have 15 million users.
Exactly.
It's already, without Bitcoin, it's like the number one app on the App Store.
Number one finance app for the last 2 years.
Without Bitcoin, like the majority of users that are downloading it aren't even downloading it for Bitcoin. They're just downloading it because Cash App's a dope app.
Yeah.
And right there in two clicks, they just have Bitcoin at any point if they so desire. And who knows, the integrations they could do, like, could be, they, you know, they could, there's multiple different paths here they can go down.
Yeah. So, and it's interesting that this revenue growth is happening in the depths of a bear market as well, which is extremely promising.
Yeah. Revenue, like massive growth. I mean, Larry from the block,
Lawmaster.
Yeah. He was making fun of a projected Square Cash App growth chart. And it was like by like 2024, Cash App would be selling more Bitcoin than the total Bitcoin in circulation. And like, obviously, like, there, you can't sell more Bitcoin than our total in circulation. But, like, you really, like, start to think, like, how much that, like, adds up. Like, when you have, like, access to Bitcoin so easily to so many people and so few people own it right now, like, you know, you really start to
understand
realize
the gravity of that.
Yeah, and, like, how scarce Bitcoin really is. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah. I mean, that's what we talked about with Tom and Tom Garambone and Johnny Dilley a few weeks ago, is that these bull runs are precipitated by on-ramps being produced that make it easier to buy Bitcoin, where in 2017, to get set up. It probably took 3 weeks between initiation of a Coinbase account.
They were like selling Polo accounts. Do you remember that shit?
Yeah. It's like, and people were trying to buy Bitcoin, and they would have to wait weeks. And now, I mean, Cash App, it probably takes a couple days to get your account set up and your bank account hooked up.
Do you only do the KYC after you, when you enable Bitcoin, do you do additional KYC? Is that it?
I'm not positive. Yeah.
I'm trying to think, like, if you're just a Cash App user, do you actually have, do you have to do more verification than you already did to enable Bitcoin?
I think to withdraw, possibly.
It happens at the withdrawal process?
Possibly.
I think it might be when you activate it. But either way, it definitely requires more, right?
Yes.
It's a selfie.
Yeah, a selfie or a driver's license picture, I believe.
So it'll still take like a new... My point is it'll still take like a regular Cash App user, if they wanted to buy Bitcoin, it'll take them like 2 days or something.
Yes.
The first time.
And then even so, once you, if you are set up already, instead of having to wait 5 days for the ACH transfer and then 5 days for the Bitcoin to hit your Coinbase account, you can get it immediately and can send it to a Trezor within minutes.
Right, you already have it.
Yes.
It's still the quickest way, even with that process. And new users will feel way more comfortable doing that with a company like Square, you know, a publicly traded billion-dollar company, billions of dollars. And
so this,
then like a rando.
So this ties back to like what I was touching on a bit earlier. Like, does, do you think like incumbents are sort of waiting on the sidelines, like for a certain Lindy threshold to be hit? Again, I mentioned in the Ben today, I think a decade is a big mental sort of checkpoint for a lot of people. Do you think, these guys, a lot of incumbents are waiting on the sidelines, just looking at Bitcoin startups kill themselves and figuring out how they can perfect like an onboarding process just to come in later, sort of take over?
I think there's a huge difference between 9.5 years and 10.5 years. It's just some weird human psychology thing.
Yeah. And this is not to like discourage Bitcoin startups or anything. This is just something I'm curious about.
I mean, they're going to try to, you know, whether they'll be effective at doing that or not is yet to be seen. I mean, we're seeing it with Cash App versus like a Coinbase, which was like the main American, it still is the main American point of adoption. So we'll see how that plays out. There's probably room for both of them. Coinbase is like kind of an exception when it comes to Bitcoin startups though, cause it's like the heavyweight in the room, VC backed and whatnot. I don't know. I think like something like CoinKite, like you can't replicate CoinKite from a big business. Like there's no big business that's going to come in and make Bitcoiners buy, you know, lose faith in Rodolfo and CoinKite, unless, you know, he does something completely separate from that big business coming in. But like he's carved out a really strong niche and reputation. There's like a web of trust there element.
Yeah,
the guys at Trezor.
Yeah, the guys at TFTC. We have to watch our backs from like the incumbent media trying to come in.
Yeah, when like CNN's trying to take our jobs.
Yeah, it's going to happen at some point. We just hope you freaks stay with us, you know. Been around. No, I don't think any incumbent's going to come out with like better hardware like than Rodolfo or Trezor or Ledger at
well,
this
like,
point.
So like an interesting one is like a...
I think on-ramps is like a very specific vertical where they could...
Easily
take over.
Because they flex their regulatory muscle, right? Their fiat compliance. Like Square already had banking relationships and everything. I think with like exchange products, you could see that, you know, really easily. You see it with like the futures, you know, with CME futures. While Bitfinex BitMEX has to operate in like a complete legal gray area and have no fiat connections, CME just has full banking privileges. I absolutely anywhere that it connects to like an interesting one will be like Fidelity, like the Fidelity versus like a Zappo.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right.
But it's good to see like Fidelity has people like Bob McElrath on their team. I'm sorry if I butchered your name there, Bob, if you're even listening to this, but he seems like to know what he's talking about. And it seems like they snipe somebody who's very sort of aware of the nitty-gritty stuff that's going on within Bitcoin, which is what you want to see.
Oh, yeah. No, exactly. That's why it'll be interesting. I mean, and Fidelity is like an extremely established custodian, but then Zappo is an extremely established Bitcoin custodian. So,
yeah.
Should be interesting to watch it all play out.
Zappo. This is a small tangent here. It's a company with CEO Wences Cesaris. He's one of the few people in the space who has had the balls to swallow his pride and admit that he was wrong.
He's the only one, right?
Yeah.
Literally the only person who applied, apologized for Segwit2x.
Shout out to Wences. A true man of honor.
I don't think there was a single other person.
I don't either.
Of, like, the top dogs.
I didn't look too far into this. Amazon managed blockchain takes aim at centralized shitcoins.
Ooh, this one was fun. You like my headline? That was a great headline.
It's a good headline.
No, they can just like they call them decentralized apps, which is hilarious. But you can just spin up a blockchain. I think Hyperwave and Ethereum right now is what they've
Hyperledger, Fabric, and Ethereum. Similar to what Azure did.
Yeah, but now Amazon's doing it.
Okay.
It was like another day. Like, if you have a centralized project, like, I can just spin up one right now on AWS, and, like, I'll have amazing connectivity and whatnot.
Yeah, this was pretty predictable. Yeah. Is this mean Ethereum's getting adoption?
No, it doesn't. It's not any, it's not, I guess, like, it helps them, like, test apps and stuff. They have, like, that going, that advantage. But it doesn't, it's not any meaningful, Amazon's not, like, using Ethereum.
Will it eventually be connected?
No. Good questions.
Yeah. This is
it's the normal ones. Yeah,
we should find out. So that's the thing. It's completely expected. Facebook, this isn't on the list either, but they're turning, they're very privacy conscious now. Apparently they're working on a blockchain as well. Do you have faith in that project?
They need the blockchain for the privacy. No, I mean, they're just private and it's just lip service. They're just giving lip service. Obviously, you know, and they're adding the blockchain buzzword. They also want, like, AI to moderate things with machine learning. They love all the buzzwords. And then they bought a VR company.
Throwing them all together.
Yeah.
I have not been on Facebook for about 8 months now, and I've never been happier.
I deleted my account a couple years ago.
I don't miss it at all.
Delete, delete, delete.
This was cool. This dropped yesterday. I was happy to see this. Not a huge fan of this product, because I don't think it's the best way to get access to Bitcoin, that product being GBTC, offered by Grayscale Investments. But they dropped a hell of a meme of a...
It was an expensive commercial, man.
...ad campaign. So the dropgold.com, if you freaks are... We'll put the link in the show notes. Obviously, dropgold.com. Grayscale Investments is advertising their GBTC.
It's Barry Silbert's
Barry Silbert's
company.
It's a way to get... exposure to Bitcoin. It's very limited. Very
it's like
limited
a fake
access.
ETF.
It's like basically a fake ETF. Trades at a very high premium. I believe it's like 20%, 20 to 25% at times.
The premium changes, yeah.
Yeah.
Just based on the they own like a certain amount of Bitcoin, and then they keep. There's a redemption process where you can add to the amount that they hold, and basically arbitrage the premium. But that process takes a year because it's not a true ETF. It's like, I don't know, it's like on Pink Sheets or something.
Yeah, it's on Pink Sheets.
So there's that premium there. But it's an investment product that a lot of people like it because you can use it for your retirement accounts and stuff like that, in America at least.
Yes. So this Drop Gold campaign is them basically pitting Bitcoin versus gold. Buy gold, buy Bitcoin, BYE gold. BUY Bitcoin. It was a very...
Did they say that in the video?
I don't know if they said it in the video, but it was on the landing page.
It was in their copy?
Yes.
Oh, I thought that was your... I thought you wrote that. You came up with that. I was like, Marty, that's a great meme. Well done.
It wasn't in... There was two headlines. One said buy gold, and then they gave a little spiel, and the next one said buy Bitcoin. They gave the spiel. Sort of combined them. Helped them out a little bit. Simplified the message for them. This was... incredible messaging. It's going to be blasted out to normies all across America. I think
it's going to be on like CNBC commercials and shit like that.
Yeah. And I think
it was an expensive commercial.
Yeah. I can see it. It's definitely, I would not be surprised to see it on CBS on Sundays watching golf. But it's going to be, it's great guerrilla marketing. And I think one thing beautiful about it, it seemed a little selfless on their part. It was just basically Bitcoin versus gold. Didn't really pump GBTC too hard.
I think, it's like, the gold versus Bitcoin is like, it's kind of like a false dichotomy. I think Bitcoin's superior to gold, but I don't think it just completely replaces. Like, I think, like to quote Litecoin, like I think gold is like the silver to Bitcoin's gold. Mm-hmm. Right?
It's a backup plan.
Yeah. And it's like a physical, kind of a physical scarce representation. But the important thing about this is it's triggering a ton of gold bugs. And there's going to be this whole debate that happens while they try and prove it wrong, where people are basically comparing the properties of Bitcoin and gold, and that's got to bring some new people in.
Yeah, Bitcoin's going to win out on merit there, we would
and
argue.
And, like, just qualities. It's just better money.
I think, yeah, and the if you freaks haven't seen the commercial yet, the sort of visualization that the commercial brings to light is, like, trying to transport gold. People are carrying it in, like, chain purses and wheelbarrows and dollies and stuff like that.
And then, like, the second they dropped the gold and, like, took the Bitcoin, they were sprinting and they were free and they were running. And everyone was, like, young and good-looking.
Yeah, was that all down on Wall Street? That had to be expensive to shut down Wall Street to get that.
Supposedly, someone said they filmed it in Buenos Aires.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know. That's just a random tweeter who responded to my tweet. So.
They replicated the Wall Street subway stop, the sixth stop, very well then.
Maybe not. Maybe they didn't. Who knows? That was just a random tweeter. I did not follow up on it at all.
So Americans out there, that should be coming to a TV screen near you. Be on the lookout for it. Just awareness.
Dropgold.com.
Is this going to be better than the BitPay Super Bowl or, excuse me, College Bowl sponsorship?
I think it's way better. I think, honestly, I think there's a lot of things that were better than that. I was going to, like, start. There's so many that were better advertisements than the BitPay.
Put my hand up. I'm going to give some props to Roger Ver. I think his Bitcoin is the honey badger of money.
Yeah, that was a pretty good meme.
That was a big billboard, right?
Yeah.
I thought that was a good one. Yeah, so again, be on the lookout for that.
And like, that's obviously custodial. They're not your keys.
Yeah.
For most people, you should self-custody your own keys, not your keys, not your coins.
For most people, I would imagine the process of getting access to GPTC would be too arduous. They would just choose something like the Cash App anyway. But this is going to pump Bitcoin no matter what. It's not going to pump Bitcoin. when I say pump Bitcoin.
No matter what, guys.
No, I mean pump in an advert. It's going to advertise Bitcoin.
Yes. And it should increase adoption, I would say.
Increase awareness. Pump awareness. That's what I'm saying. Not the price.
Talking about awareness, the blockchain cap had that new study.
Was
like 9 of 10 millennials. I have the excerpt there.
No, the cohorts were more granular than just millennials. I think it was like 18 to 25-year-olds.
So it's even smaller.
Yeah.
9 of 10 have heard of Bitcoin.
11% of... let me pull this up.
It seemed like a lot of people have heard of it, but a lot of people don't. Most don't own it.
This isn't in the show notes.
I'm pretty sure I put them there. And then the other one was Fidelity. Fidelity surveyed 400... institutional clients, and I think 22% said they already held Bitcoin or another digital asset, and 47%, including that 22%, said that they wanted exposure in their portfolio.
Yes. So I got this on Blockchain Capital study up. Bitcoin awareness has gone up to 89% from 77% overall. From the fall of 2017, when we were in the midst of a bull market, mind you, to the spring of 2019, actually a couple of weeks ago, I believe the data was collected. So awareness is at 90% between 18, 34-year-olds, almost 90% between 35, 44-year-olds, almost 90% across the board. A lot of people are familiar with it. 43% of respondents had a positive connotation with it, where it was 34% in the fall of 2017. So, like, across the board, it seems that people are more aware of Bitcoin and more attribute positive feelings to it more than they did a couple of years ago. But
they don't own it.
They don't own it. I believe, yeah. So Nick Carter, I believe, tried to crunch the numbers of the total number of Americans. This is all Americans too, mind you, that were surveyed. He crunched the numbers, and it's an insane number, like 25 million would have owned it if those projections are true, which seems a bit high.
There's no way. I feel like it's got to be lower than 25 million owned Bitcoin.
Yeah, but somebody in the somebody responded to Nick in that thread, ZND Toshi, I believe.
Yeah.
He's an Anon, and he actually brought up a good point that people may have just been sort of virtue signaling that they own because they see it as like a thing of status. Like, yeah, I own Bitcoin. Like, I'm in on it. Like,
plenty of people will lie about having stack sets.
Which is like another, and I guess we can get into surveys. The survey is obviously not foolproof, 100%.
I'm looking at this sample right now, and like they had a like pretty good sample. So 2,000 people, 2,029 people. And it's like split up pretty well. They actually, they surveyed more women than men.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think the interesting thing is every time when you start your podcast, your interview series, you say, "How did you get into Bitcoin?" A lot of people, almost all the people actually, say they first heard about it and they just dismissed it, and then 8 months, year and a half, 2 years later, whatever, something brought them back in, and then they jumped in. You know, that's how it happened to me. I think that's how it happened to you.
Yep.
So all these people, they've been primed. They're aware of it now. Now it just needs to jump back into their consciousness another time, or another 2 times, and bang, bang.
Bang, bang is right. Maybe a grayscale will help us with that consciousness jumpstart. No, but again, this is... slowly but surely, and I think the one thing that Spencer pointed out in his conclusion, what this is, he referenced it as a mega demographics sort of trend, and it's the youth leading it in sort of understanding Bitcoin more innately than the older generations, which makes sense for a lot of reasons, obviously, because we are internet natives, at least people our age are, I would say. I'm just on the cusp. I remember life without the internet, but it wasn't too long.
Like AOL.
Yeah. We had AOL.
Chat rooms.
I got AOL in the back of a Millennium Backstreet Boys album, I'm pretty sure. but again, it's more natural, like a conversation with Jack. He said, you look at kids now, I've got nieces, nephews, cousins have kids. They're 2-3 years old. They already know how to enter their parents' passwords, find pictures of themselves and stuff. Like, it's going to be more innate for them. That's another reason. And another factor of this is probably like generational, I don't want to say envy, but like, hey, we sort of got the shit end of the stick here, and maybe Bitcoin could provide a better future. That's what I would imagine sort of are the reasons for that demographic push from the younger people to sort of come to Bitcoin more easily.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like, yeah, it seems like it's like one of those, every once in a while, like a generation has like an opportunity for like massive wealth transfer events.
Is it every generation though?
No, every so often a generation gets that chance. Like we saw the I don't know what generation they were, but like if you're in like that prime age group of like 22 to 30 in like the late 70s going into the 80s, like in finance, like you just made fucking bank.
Yeah.
Or like real estate or something like that.
Yeah, when Louis Ranieri opened up the collateralized debt obligation markets, really
right,
set
exactly.
things off.
They just like everything exploded, and it was just right place at the right time.
Yes.
So it's not unheard of for that to be the case, and I think that young people in general are, it's easier for them to grok and understand this shit, having value online, and they have much less to lose. They've been sold a bad rap. They're young. They can take higher risks. So like I'd be really surprised. And I think we see that in Bitcoin. I think it skews young in general.
Yeah, I would say with a lot of certainty that it definitely does.
I mean, I love our older community, but
shout out to Bitcoin Tina. I know you're listening.
But like it definitely skews younger, I would say, and I think that's going to be awesome.
I do as well.
Because the older folks, they talk down to us. You know, the older no-coiners are the worst. They're the worst no-coiners.
Well, they have more to lose, right?
Yeah,
they have
exactly.
Everything to lose. Yeah.
I'm excited to watch them lose it.
Speaking about losing it, lose those chain analysis companies following you and join the people who were coin joining on the Bitcoin network. Recently, I believe Kyle Torpy reported this on longhash.com. CoinJoin Bitcoin payments have nearly tripled and account for 4.09% of all transactions on the network.
It's not a huge number, but, you know, it's not too shabby.
None. It was, looking at that chart, it's funny going back. Like, CoinJoins were very popular in, like, 2012. They made a resurgence in 2014.
Yeah, but they were worse implementations. Mm-hmm. The early ones were, like, people testing.
There's a lot of mixers, too, back then, right?
Yeah, but those don't show up as a CoinJoin.
That's true.
In that chart.
Yes.
The big hump that it looks like we were doing really well and then we, like, lost progress was blockchain.info's shared coin service, which was, like, CoinJoin in your browser. And there was a lot of issues with that implementation. So, like, even though, like, and I remember using that. Did you ever use shared coin?
I never used the blockchain.info wallet.
I used it just for shared coin because, you know, I wanted to try it out or whatever. It was just horrible. It was just a horrible experience. And supposedly, like, the privacy wasn't. I think you had you obviously trusted them, you know, it was going through their servers and everything. And then as a result, they were liable. So they made themselves like a regulatory target at the same time. And it just was ineffective from a privacy perspective. So that's like, this is really the best on the best percentage.
The strongest use of coin joins
that we've ever had.
Yes.
I would say.
Yes. Yeah. And it's rising. And like we said,
at a massive, it'd be awesome if the price rose at that rate. Just everyone's, it's awesome to see.
Yeah. Like we said, privacy loves company. If you're not coin joining and you're looking to, I know it can be stressful. It's stressful for me as well.
It was pretty simple, right?
It's pretty simple, but it is stressful moving UTXOs.
Yeah. I mean, I think like if you move like a small amount, I mean, the minimum is 0.1. So that's like $500. So it's like impossible to really move a small amount. So I guess I'll take that back. But if you start with like smaller amounts and like get used to it, like that's good.
Yes. And the UX is getting better. And while we're on this topic, Samurai, they're entering their mainnet testing phase for their Whirlpool, which is another sort of.
It's another coin join.
Coin join.
Yeah, tool.
Another way to mix up your UTXOs and develop some sense of privacy.
Yeah, the more the merrier, as many as we have. So they're going through testing right now. They're doing, so Wasabi's doing rounds of 100 at 0.1 minimum.
I've seen.
Samurai's doing half the amount, because you have to do coordinated amounts. Everyone has to be sending the same amount no matter what, otherwise you can't mix them together. But Samurai plans to, because they're using smaller round sizes, like 5, it's quicker, you know, at the sake of some privacy, it's quicker and you get, you can do way more denominations, different denominations, because you can spread your liquidity out more.
Yeah. So it's 50 million Satoshis is the minimum?
Yeah. Not 50 million.
Yeah, 50, right? 0.05? Or 5 million.
Yeah, that's 5 million.
It's Marty math for you.
Wow, you're really fucking with me.
5 million Satoshis.
I was like, there's no way. It's definitely, yeah.
5 million Satoshis, excuse me.
Okay, there we go.
I'm sorry.
Well, at least we got it. At least we got it. Thinking in sats. We got to start thinking in sats.
I saw the demo, somebody demoing, I don't know, was this Whirlpool or the Kahoots thing they have where you can just in-person coin join by like scanning the QR code, then you scan the QR code.
Yeah, that's their other, that's, I think, Kahoots.
Kahoots,
that's what they're calling it, right? Yeah. I haven't tested out either yet. I've been meaning to test out the Samurai Whirlpool, but I haven't yet.
Yes. And
Kahoots, I need someone to be in Kahoots with, so I'm working on that one too. But yeah, that's like a small person coin joint.
Yes. And with this now, like, they're going to, they plan to open source everything in the future, correct?
Yes.
Yes.
The back end, I don't think is still not open source.
Still not open source. So that's, that's, is there, there's a degree of trust there where you're running stuff through their servers, but they plan on moving away from that in the future.
Right.
Yes.
And now they have Tor integrated. So presumably they can't link your IP.
Yes. Thank you for bringing up Tor. We talked about this last week, like run your own Tor node. Was it Pierre or Max Hildebrand I don't think they brought it to our attention, but they brought it to somebody's attention on Twitter that if Tour goes down, you sort of have to have a kill switch in your node because it sort of exposes you. If like your Tour node goes down,
yeah,
while your information is running through it, so just be cognizant of that.
And like a lot of VPNs too. Well, first of all, if you use Tails with Tor, it only connects through Tor. A lot of VPNs, like in the VPN app or in OpenVPN, if that's what you use or whatever you use, like there's usually like a checkbox to kill it. When there's, because you don't want it to just switch to ClearNet if you're doing, all of a sudden it's just the nodes open on ClearNet.
Yeah, it's just like ripping your towel off if you're walking through the house. Everybody's going to be able to see your private parts. Or what you thought was private. Bad joke?
No, I was just thinking about the kill switch issue. Yeah, it is. So it's, the issue is that if Tor goes down on your device, you don't want it to all of a sudden be broadcasting whatever you're broadcasting. And if you're, it's your node, if your node's running through Tor, if your node's running through Tor and then Tor gets killed, the node needs to stop running instead of continue to broadcast.
Yes. So just be aware of that. I do not know of any sort of simple solutions to that off the top of my head.
Well, I'm trying to, if like, for instance, like Casa doesn't even run their node through Tor to begin with. I'm pretty sure they only run the Lightning portion through Tor.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to ask the Nautil. I'm curious if the Nautil has a kill switch for their Tor integration. And then who commented on Twitter about that?
I think it was Pierre or Max Hildebrand. I'm not positive.
There was someone responded that. So what I was talking about was like a software level kill switch. So that's like if the node just at the software level realizes Tor goes down and it just shuts it. It just cuts the internet.
Yeah, I feel like there could be no fan function. Like if this isn't messaging through Tor, then don't send it.
Yeah, but there is. But the guy, whoever responded, was like, you still might leak. You still might, like, if you really do care about your privacy, like, I think the only way to properly do it is separate hardware. So, like, basically you have, like, a piece of hardware in between everything that runs that logic. Okay. So that you can cut it out from the hardware level, not rely on any of the software to do the right thing, and make sure you don't leak any actual. So, like, you know, privacy, like, it's just always trade-offs between convenience and privacy and convenience and security. And hopefully these types of issues will become easier for the end user.
Hey, we're here to highlight pain points for all you wily entrepreneurs out there, okay? If you guys see these issues and they aren't solved yet, get out there. Fucking solve them.
That's stressful.
Probably should have tacked this on to the blockchain survey, but Fidelity surveyed 400 institutional investors.
Oh, yeah, I dropped that while you were searching.
While I was searching. All right, yeah, you did drop
this. To fill this out. I gave that exact stat, right? 22% have bought.
22% already have exposure. 40%,
and 47?
Exposure makes sense.
For
yes.
47, right?
Yes.
You see, I even had the numbers memorized. That's a good one. That's a really good one. 22% is still not that many of them.
No. Marty's trying to do math in his head right now. It's not happening.
78% left.
Yeah.
And who knows how much the 22% own. They probably don't even own that much. They're just dipping their feet in.
Yeah. But it's, again, slowly but surely, it's happening. Again, Lindy comes into effect. Every block that Bitcoin produces just makes it more probable that it'll survive into the future. And the fact that it's becoming more probable that it'll survive into the future is forcing these institutional investors, these big public companies and other and governments even to sort of think about this. It's a thing that they had to deal with now.
I think the majority, they said 47% were interested, 22% already owned it. So that's 25% difference. Those 25%, like, basically what they're waiting for is they're just going to FOMO buy in at like a little over 10K.
Yeah, and then
that's just gonna happen. Like, they wait for the confirmation.
Yeah, another stat out of this, which may be more important, is that financial advisors and family offices, respectively, have a 74%, 80% favorable view of digital assets. Bitcoin probably being the number one digital asset on their minds, and those are the people selling to the people with money. So that's good to see as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's an easy sell for family offices.
I mean, why not? 1%, as our boy Wences would say. More institutions getting into the fray. E-Trade is joining the party. This news dropped, I believe, while we were recording last week. They plan to offer Bitcoin trading to their 5 million customers, and this just loops back to what we were talking about early, is incumbents basically creating...
There's more infrastructure.
More on-ramps. Is this like a Robinhood where you can't... You're not going to be able to get access to your keys, obviously.
Yeah, same with TD Ameritrade and shit.
Yeah.
It's super easy for them to integrate this. And, like, a lot of people are going to use it.
Yeah. So, E-Trade's joining the party, joining Robinhood, TD Ameritrade, Fidelity, other big institutions.
That's crazy. Like, that is absolutely insane. I mean, imagine if we had that infrastructure in 2017.
Can this bullish fundamental news overcome the bearish news of potential Bitfinex?
The Bitfinex is just going to... I mean, it could go the two ways, basically, right?
Yeah.
We'll see. But I think no matter what, like, we're going to have to talk about Tether and Bitfinex for, like, way too long. Nothing's going to happen quickly. Unless it just all implodes.
Do you think
nothing good is going to happen quickly? I mean, the possibility of something just being rosy and everything going great and not having to talk about it all the time is zero. There's no way that happens, especially with this ICO they're doing and shit.
Yeah, is Bitfinex about the red wedding us? Like, everything's all cheery.
And then they just, everyone dies. You know, that'd be exciting.
Use a little bit more excitement. It's been a pretty boring 6 months, has it been?
No, it hasn't been boring at all.
No, it's true. It's never boring. Maybe we're just jaded, or I'm just jaded.
Jaded about what?
I've just been seeing too much shit.
What kind of shit?
Where should we start? I mean, should we go all the way back to, like, 2013, the altcoin launches? Remember that when David Seaman was going around pumping Hypercoin?
I always forget about David
when
Seaman.
When Bryce was launching Zeta Coin, Dark Coin, Drake, Dirac.
Ugh.
That was some shit. Getting exit scammed by MinPal. That was my hard first lesson.
No matter what era, there's always an exchange that everyone thinks is going to be the best exchange forever and ever and just dominate everyone else and no one else has a chance. And, like, right now that's Binance. Like, for a solid period there, it was MinPal, I feel like. You know? It never really... I don't think it was ever, like, the main exchange. Like, one of the top exchanges.
Polo,
but it was, like, always...
Bittrex were around then.
Had such a good reputation, and then it just...
Yeah, apparently the founder of MinPal is a pretty huge scumbag. I'm pretty sure he's a domestic abuser and shit like that. And then just took...
That's
a bunch
pretty fucked up.
Just took a bunch of people.
It's obviously Bitcoin's fault.
Yeah, fault that he's a shit person.
Do you remember Neon B?
This rings a bell, yes.
It was like the bank in Cyprus. Danny Brewster was doing it.
Yeah. Danny Brewster's...
And he sold an IEO. Or, I mean, I guess IEO is supposed to stand for initial exchange offering. But he sold equity of NeoMB. It was going to be like a Bitcoin bank. And, like, Cyprus was going through shit at that point. So it was like the Venezuela situation where it was, you know, Bitcoin could help
bank
Cyprus.
Going on. Yeah.
And that whole thing just completely imploded on itself.
Yeah. We've come a long way since that era.
I thought that was going to be the future at one point. I was like, yeah, there's just going to be like Bitcoin banks in the corner.
Hey, we don't know. There may be in the future.
He's going to like do like customer support and stuff. I don't know. I guess it's a decent idea.
So we had that. The ICOs of
just ahead of its time.
Going to an Ethereum meetup and having them pitch ICOs to company like the day after Vlad was like, please do not build critical apps on Ethereum. That was it's another thing that drove me a little nuts.
There was a couple months there where I just thought I was like, maybe I was wrong. You know, like maybe And it's funny because a lot of people, you know, like you get that during the bear market, but like I got it during like the height of 2017 bull market because like none of it made sense. The like the token craze, the whole ICO fucking mess. I was just like, maybe do I am I missing something? Am I an idiot? Like, what's going on here?
I don't know. Well, this is a good segue into the last topic, which is Ethereum.org officially updated their website.
ETH is money now.
ETH is money now. So this goes into like that token economy didn't make sense. Token economy built on ERC-20 tokens fueled by gas, which is Ether.
ETH was always money. Like people, like everyone knew even during like the ICO and shit. It was just all marketing.
Yeah. So they've changed their marketing. They pivoted from unstoppable Turing complete world computer applications to fueled by Ether, which is gas, to I believe a decentralized finance platform with Ether as the money token. Is this goalpost moving? Is this sharpening the narrative? Is this a pivot? What is this?
Yes. I would say all of those. I mean, look, we've all been saying that ETH is a competing money for like the longest time. So for them to admit it is like, that's got to be a positive, right? Yes. I don't know. I'm like happy about that. Like now, like if you compete on terms of money, like Bitcoin's is the better money. Like Bitcoin's the best money we have.
No, I would agree. I just think it's hilarious watching the Ethereum thought leaders sort of adopt the Bitcoin narratives that Bitcoiners have been trying to educate them on for years. And now it seems like they're finally coming around. Will ETH be able to outcompete Bitcoin? We shall see. I'm not too optimistic on that, but...
Oh, you're not optimistic on Ethereum?
No, not too optimistic. Do they even know what Ethereum is going to be?
I'm not positive.
Neither am I. But we'll include the Ethereum.org
we don't have to include it in the show notes. You can just go to it if you want to go to it.
Yeah, you can go to that too. But it was interesting. That was
they put money like three times on the front. Like it's money now. Like they went full. It wasn't.
And the site has been a cause for contention over the years because they haven't updated it since like 2014, I believe.
Yeah, I went back. Did you go back to the archives?
I saw the one. Somebody posted the archive link to a certain state.
I was just going, you go to like archive.org and you can just click through all the different years and it's pretty interesting watching. You can see the pre-sale. And like it's just pretty interesting watching it progress.
Yeah. What's going on, programmable POW? Is that, I believe they're taking the foot off that gas pedal.
I have no idea. Who the hell knows? I haven't been following it.
I think I heard rumors they're taking their foot off that really? Gas pedal. I'm not sure.
I was surprised that good for them. ProgPow was I don't think it was a good idea. So
yeah. All right, that's all we got for topics. We got a few minutes to riff here. You have riffing topics on the top of your head?
We're going to be at BitBlock Boom and the San Francisco Bitcoin Conference.
2019.
I think our code's RHR for both, right?
RHR for both. I'm going to be at the Value of Bitcoin Conference in Munich in June, too. Speaking about Bitcoin and traditional banking, this is a cool conference. It's bringing Bitcoiners and a bunch of German bankers together to sort of pitch Bitcoin. Excited for that. I guess one thing to riff on here... to end it too is that I guess there was an article on CoinDesk, a Venezuelan came out basically saying that Bitcoin is not a panacea for Venezuela and shouldn't be marketed that way, and that's something we agree with here at TFTC. It's
absolutely,
we've said it many times, it's not a panacea, it's simply a tool that is available if Venezuelans want to use it.
No, and you really want to have it before the crisis happens.
Yes,
like if you, it's like really hard to get afterwards, and it's, you know, just way more difficult. The ideal situation is to have Bitcoin first. I have something to riff on. Is Bitcoin a Ponzi scheme?
Ooh.
This was FUD that I thought it was extinguished.
This is from the Stripe guy?
What?
Is this from the Stripe guy?
No, this is from Tweeterers.
Tweeterers?
Yeah, like people... So my belief with Bitcoin is that it's a scarce asset. So the more people that buy it, the higher the price goes, right? But the higher the price goes, like when we have those price pumps, like I think it's the main driver of new adoption. Like people actually hear about Bitcoin and pay attention to Bitcoin because the price is going up through the roof. And then they like come in and like, or maybe like they get aware of it once and they don't get aware of it till the next run up or whatever. But then that new adoption then brings the price up even higher in the next pump. And then that brings even more people. And it's like this ridiculous like feedback loop.
It's a beautiful feedback loop.
Right. So I posted a tweet about that.
And I saw that.
I could have worded it a little bit better.
You missed an important part. Hash power plays into that feedback loop as well.
Right.
Yeah.
But that's just, that's more adoption.
Yes.
Hash power is more adoption. So I think that, so I was just getting tons of haters just saying, oh, like Bitcoin's a Ponzi scheme. And like a lot of them were either Bitcoin Cash people or altcoiners. It wasn't even like no coiners.
Well, that's why I think not having the hash power aspect into it sort of hurt your argument, because hash power represents a sort of a sunk cost of hardware and energy that sort of proves that people are willing to put skin in the game to acquire this scarce token, which I think would sort of destroy the Ponzi scheme argument.
Right, but I wasn't making an anti-Ponzi scheme argument. They were levering Ponzi scheme at me. And then, the main response in my mind is that POW gives you permissionless access, right? So you can exchange work at a true market rate that's not controlled by anyone for Bitcoin from the network.
Yes.
And I thought it was interesting that, like, Ethereum people were leveling this at me. And, like, proof of stake is way more pyramid characteristics than Bitcoin. Like, I would never say that to them, but like it's ridiculous that they would, I don't know, say that Bitcoin is a, and like it's not even a Ponzi, like it's more pyramid scheme than Ponzi. Like you need a dude named Ponzi at the top to be a Ponzi.
Yes, you need a central, you need a Madoff.
Yeah,
so I can steal,
or like a Vitalik type or something like that. You know, so it'd be pyramid. But anyway, that's besides the point.
No, and then with proof of stake, like if we're playing out sort of like the logical thought experiment, like if it ever does become successful, people are just going to be incentivized to lock up their tokens.
And you can have like cartels that don't sell.
Yes.
They don't sell. It's inherently requires more permission because you have to buy from an existing holder. You can't just plug in hardware and get distributed coins.
Yes. So Bitcoin is not a Ponzi scheme. It's a bad argument.
But maybe Ethereum is.
Maybe.
No, I think that's like I just think that like cryptocurrency, like multi-coiners, like shouldn't be. Don't call Bitcoin a Ponzi. Like that's
anything
just
thrown at Bitcoin can be thrown at you like five times as hard. So
yeah, it's just a bad precedent to set. Throwing stones from glass houses. And it's definitely, I wouldn't say it was a pyramid scheme either. Like, there's no other way that you could bootstrap, like a new money in a fair way it's hard to imagine, like, a fairer method than, like, people buy in at their, involuntarily, like, when they want to.
Yeah, you're preaching to the choir, brother. It's, you don't have to sell me on this, but yeah. I think if you threw hash power into your formula, you would have.
So where am I putting hash power in it?
So
it was price, a bad tweet. I could have composed the tweet better.
So it goes price. So I would do it. Price leads to more hash power because miners are going after a token that has more value. So they're willing to put more capital on the line, and which inherently makes Bitcoin more secure to an extent. And that in turn makes the proposition value of owning Bitcoin more valuable, which,
oh, because it's more secure.
Yes, coupled with the price.
I could see that.
Yeah, and then more people drives the price up, which drives the hash power.
I was just trying to keep it really simple. I should have kept it simpler. It's just my Bitcoin thesis is just with adoption, the price will go up. So as more people adopt it, the fucking price will go up, and I think more people will adopt it. So that's my thesis.
Buy gold, buy Bitcoin. That's all we're trying to say here.
Drop gold.
That's all we got for this week, freaks. Thank you for joining us, as always. We haven't even talked about the site. I think we're going to launch that tonight at midnight. Or actually, I'm not going to put a date on it. I'm not going to put pressure on the dev that way. We will announce the site on Twitter in the next in the next 24 hours.
This, I love that.
The hats will go on sale. They're very limited supply. They'll be under the merch tab. You'll be able to find them there. So, yeah, I think we have to use Shopify for the shop to start because BTC Pay Server doesn't have their shipping end of things figured out. But I think we'll go completely Bitcoin native pretty soon.
But it uses BTC Pay Server for the Bitcoin payments?
Yes. Yeah, it'll be using our BTC Pay Server for that.
Even when it goes through Shopify?
I'm pretty sure, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. So, but you will be able to pay in fiat if you so please, and are looking to stack sats, spend fiat stack sats.
Are we a Lolly partner?
No, we're not a Lolly partner.
We should become a Lolly partner.
We should become.
Does
a
that cost
partner.
Us any money?
I don't know, Alex. If you're listening,
hi, Alex.
We'll talk. We'll sidebar this.
Yeah, we'll message you.
All right. You have a final note for the freaks.
Stay humble, stack sats.
Yeah. Peace and love. Stay chill. Just kidding, freaks. Talk to our dev. Site will be launched on Sunday. Sorry for getting your hopes up there. We aim to please here. We want to make sure that the site is perfect before we launch it. It will be launched on Sunday.